Hello there. So, it is Monday, July 8th, 2019, when I'm recording this. I'm Dwayne McCacker, and welcome to the Community From Within podcast. And I'm driving home after work in my car, and I was not planning to record anything today. I have not actually had not been thinking about it, but after I left my office and started walking up to the parking lot, I had this idea in my head to pick up on a previous theme I mentioned, because something's been kind of dwelling in the back of my mind a bit, and I'll get to that in a minute. I don't know how often I'm going to be able to keep recording these. I enjoy doing it, but I'm driving in my car. When we bought this car, it's a Hyundai Accent. It's a 2014. We went to the dealer and we asked very specifically for the most basic model car. And we got the L model. And this is a car with, you know, we have wind-up windows. It's a standard transmission. And no air conditioning. We wanted something, really cheap. It was the first brand new car I'd ever even considered buying. So we wanted to go very cheap. And as cheap as possible. But also, I should say, as affordable as possible, not cheap. It's a decent car. We enjoy it. But I had also never previously owned a vehicle with air conditioning before, so I didn't know what I was missing. And so we have it. And then a few years later, I ended up buying a truck. And that had air conditioning. And all of a sudden, I was thinking, wow. I really wish I'd gotten the car, you know, a model up with the AC. But because I'm recording this while driving, I want to reduce the noise as much as possible. So even if I put the air on a little bit, it makes a little bit of noise. And if I open the windows, it makes even more noise. So I'm just going to talk on some of these ideas as long as I can stand it, basically, because it's boiling in here. I just realized I'll probably have the same issue in the winter time, except instead of being too hot, it will be too cold. Because if I put the heat on, same thing, too much noise. I'll have to look if there's a way to get a really good microphone that can pick up my voice but cancel out some of that background noise from my car. I don't know if there's anything that's good for that sort of thing. Anyway, into the point I wanted to get to today. And it's about authenticity. So I think I mentioned a couple things. I talked about that podcast about the junk, unsightly premises, that sort of thing. And I also talked about marketing, how good or not so good sometimes we are at marketing here in Cape Breton. I talked about signage and things like that. But I'm sort of fearful, I guess, that I may have left the impression that everything has to be new and what's the word I'm looking for? Modernized or fancy or you know, prestigious looking, you know what I mean? And of course, you know, I mentioned sometimes some really older looking facilities can also provide wonderful customer service or great food, whatever it is. Oh my God, sorry. There's a street sweeper ahead going around this turn. It's driving about 0 miles an hour. And there's three cars ahead of me and they can't seem to figure out how to get around it. One guy's in the center of the road now. Oh. It's gonna be a long drive home. I heard a story many years ago of a friend who was traveling in Newfoundland. They stopped, they seen a sign that said restaurant. So they stopped in. I'm just gonna go around them. They seen a sign that said restaurant. And so they stopped in, it was, they pulled in, it was basically like a house. And the way the story went, they knocked on the door and somebody greeted them, said, "Hey, come in, sit down." And there's a table there and they just sat there for a few minutes. "You're here for a meal?" "Yes." "Okay." They're waiting for the menu to appear. Next thing you know, she's just serving them food. There was no menu. It was just whatever she was making that day. And the food was good, whatever it was. I can't remember. Maybe it was a jigs dinner or something. And so in some ways, just that quick little story, it almost sounds horrifying in some ways, but in other ways it sounds amazing. Like that's a wonderful experience, I'm sure, for a lot of people. And what makes an experience wonderful is whether or not it feels authentic. When you go to a place, you want to meet the people who live there. You want to see how they live. So in one of the previous podcasts as well, I talked about this campground idea that we had many years ago. The idea being you could, almost like Airbnb now, but you sign up on a website, you book your spot at somebody's home, you go there, you park your camper in their driveway or pitch a tent in their lawn, and they would have to invite you in as part of this experience to sit with them and have a meal or a tea with some biscuits or something, you know, and have a conversation. The hosts would provide an hour of their time to speak with you, at the minimum. Knowing people around here, they would probably go much more out of their way to ensure you had a great time, show you around, tell you, you know, where the places, where are good places to go to see whatever it is you want to see. But it's that connection with people who live in an area that makes a trip memorable. You see the things that are not the touristy destinations. So, for everything I said about great advertising, good marketing, good signage, things that I'm a fan of, as well, you know, there has to be authenticity as part of that. Another, I'm not. I shouldn't mention where I was exactly, but let's just say many years ago, my wife and I were going for a drive. We were in Halifax. My sister was living in Halifax at the time, her and her boyfriend, now husband. And we stayed with them for a night on this trip. And we were driving on the south shore from Halifax going all the way to Canso because we were going to attend the Stan Rogers Folk Festival. Folk Music Festival. And along the way, we stopped, we hit up some, you know, yard sales and little shops and craft shops, things like that. And we seen this sign. Can't remember exactly what the top part said. It said something like crafts and flea market and coffee. Big black letters. C-O-F-F-E-E. And it had been a while since probably early that morning. We're probably in the afternoon at this point. And I said, let's stop in here. If nothing else, I can get a coffee. So we stop in. It was basically like a giant thrift store. It had all kinds of used goods, used items everywhere. And there's a gentleman sitting in the chair over by the counter. And my wife was looking at some couple of things, and I just went over and said, I'm looking around. I didn't really see a kitchen or anything. I said, do you have coffee? And he was from Europe originally, this gentleman, so he had an accent. And he just looked at me, no, he don't have coffee. That sign's just for stupid people, make them stop. Well, what was I supposed to say to that? Oh, well, I didn't really want a coffee. I'll go look at the crafts now. Excuse me. No, that sign's just for stupid people to make them stop. It worked. The sign worked. I never got a coffee. He didn't sell coffee. And I guess as you could, out of that whole trip from Halifax to Canso, everything in between, that's pretty much the only thing I remember from that whole trip. So he's doing something right, I guess. But yeah, I guess the point here is, it's experiences that people want, and we know this. And there were workshops here. I'm going to say 4, 5, maybe 6 years ago now, that were sponsored in part, at least, by a local Cape Breton organization called Destination Cape Breton, if I remember correctly, and the idea was on how to set up experiences. And it was all about experiential tourism. I think the Nova Scotia Department of Tourism was involved as well. It was about experiential tourism. And a lot of examples came from PEI, Prince Edward Island. They do, I mentioned this before, Prince Edward Island does tourism really well. And don't quote me on this again. I think it's something like experiencepei.ca, perhaps. I'll have to find a link and post that. But there, you know, people go to these places, they sign up online, and they pay to go to the beach and make sandcastles. They pay to gather seaweed. They pay to have a tea ceremony. They pay. There's you know, 50 or 100 different things you can do on this one website. And I know across Cape Breton Island, there's more and more people getting involved to offer experiences. The one that comes to mind, I believe, is it's a blacksmith shop in Waikagama. Is it called Firehouse? Firehouse Blacksmith? The fellow that runs that, I believe his name is Grant. If you go to his website, you can sign up. You can take a blacksmithing course for I don't know if it's an hour, 3 hours, whatever it is. But, you know, this is the sort of thing that is starting to catch on. And because it's web-based, and in essence, you almost need it to be web-based because you need to plan ahead. If you are going to offer an experience, you need to know what days and times people are going to come and show up for it. I guess it depends on what the experience is. You need to be able to plan ahead. So, versus great signage on the road and advertising attracting people, perhaps you just need to be, you need to have a good web presence, or be part of a network like Destination Cape Breton, the way Experience PEI operates. My wife and I, we attended that workshop that they did in Inverness. We had some ideas. We still have talked about certain things that we might like to do in the future. But certainly there's a world of opportunity out there. Another one is even like people with farms or gardens. People come there to help, you know, in essence we'll pay you to weed your garden, feed your animals, just so they can experience doing things that they may not ever have the chance to do if they live in an urban environment. Similar to the WOOF program. I don't know the actual acronym WOOF. Is it Workers on Organic Farms, or Worldwide Workers on Organic? There's a website for WOOF where you can sign up to volunteer. So you go, I think it's worldwide. You can go anywhere to sign up and stay with somebody for a couple days, a week, a couple months, whatever the time frames are available, and you can work on organic farms and learn different skills and techniques in exchange for room and board, basically. But as part of an experiential tourism aspect, I think it's more limited to, you know, shorter, in essence, workshops. 1 to 3 hours, maybe. And it's at a set specific time and day. I'd love to hear if you've ever done something like that. Participated in an experiential tourism, you know, type program somewhere, maybe in one of the ones in Prince Edward Island or something here in Cape Breton Island especially. And what was it like? What did you do? Send me a message at on the website communityfromwithin.com. There's a contact form. I said it before, we live here in Cape Breton Island, we live in a place where people come from all over the world to take their vacations. And they're looking for things to do. It's funny, when you grow up here, you don't always see what's in front of your face. You don't realize how much there really is here. And or we don't value the skills and abilities of people and the things they do, and recognize that there's potential there. Not only for something to do to bring a little more excitement or enjoyment to your life, but for a person with those skills and abilities to be able to generate additional income, spur economic growth, to pass on skills and knowledge to others. Like, my goodness, how about, you know, specific time of year, offer wild blueberry picking tours. If you know where there's great spots for wild blueberries, you could have a couple people sign up. If you're planning to go pick blueberries for 3 hours a day all that week anyway, why not have five other people sign up and pay you $25 a piece to go with you, and they get to take some blueberries home, half of what they pick, you keep the other half. No, but see, that's totally off the top of my head here, and it fits in with what I'm talking about. Or if you're a lobster fisherman, offer a course on the wharf Saturdays at 2 o'clock. Up to five people come down and learn how to build a traditional wooden lobster trap or lobster pot. Or learn how to make a net. Like, I remember my grandfather used to do that. He had the little, I don't know what you call it, like a, it looks similar to a shuttle for a weaving loom, but it's just a handheld little needle shuttle, and with that you'd wrap the twine on it a certain way, and you would tie a net, like a fishing net. That's a skill I would love to know today. But it's skills like that are rapidly being lost. There's a gentleman from my community. He died a couple years ago. His name was Jundan McDonald. He was a veteran. I think he was in his late 90s when he died. But a good friend of mine was saying to me, his name's Michael, we were having a conversation about just, you know, even gardening and farming and all these skills that we don't have anymore, that were not passed down from the last few generations. Like, it completely skipped a generation to the point where, you know, my parents didn't have the skills to pass to me because their parents who had them didn't pass it on to them because they wanted better lives for their children. So a lot of times that knowledge and skills, those they never got passed down. So as Michael put it with Jundan, you know, for him, you know, as a young person before electricity in this area, you know, if they were to slaughter and butcher a cow, let's say, in the middle of summer, they knew how to do everything. They knew how to kill it and slaughter it, butcher it, skin it, go through all the whole process, cutting the meat. They could preserve the meat, preserve and tan the hide. They could use that leather for whatever they needed. And all the meat was, you know, whether it was pickled or canned or bottled, and smoked, you know, there's all, made into sausages. There's all these different things that could be done prior to electricity and modern refrigeration. Ask anyone generally today how to do something like that. And so for someone like Jundan, who died now a few years ago, a couple of years ago, if you think about it, as my friend put it, that's, you know, that's 10,000 or even 100,000 years of human knowledge that's just disappearing. So to think that, you know, how to weave a fishing net, how to build a lobster trap, where to go to look for wild blueberries. You name it. If it's a rural skill, there are people out there who live in cities who would love for the opportunity to do it, to try it. Just to try it out. To get their hands dirty. And experience something that maybe we in rural areas especially, maybe today sometimes take for granted. And if you have skills like this in a rural area, and you offer it out there, I can pretty much guarantee you won't just get people coming from cities. There'll be local people who live here who will want to learn too, because they're trying now. I can testify to that. My wife and I try to grow as much of our own food as possible. We have gardens and we raise chickens and pigs, as mentioned. I've mentioned these things before. And it's a struggle. Thankfully, we have things like YouTube and a lot of other great websites out there that where people are sharing their knowledge and abilities like this, and you can learn from that. But nothing beats, you know, the opportunity to learn from firsthand from somebody who has this knowledge and skill and can put you in the driver's seat so you can actually do it yourself and learn how to do it properly. So I'm not sure if the direction I took is the same one where I started out today, but I think I've said what I wanted to say. Yeah. Tourism is definitely more about experiences today than simply offering a generic touristy. Non-authentic experience. Makes me think of there's that place in Pictou County. It was called Magic Valley. I remember being excited about it as a child. It had water slides, but it also had like the little buildings and things done up sort of like with Disney characters. I don't know how that was ever done legally with licensing and stuff, or if it was, but as little children that may have been exciting back in the called the golden era of Disney cartoons. But generally speaking, there wasn't much to it, and it no longer exists today. It's closed down, partly because the highway bypassed it, but that's not the only reason, I fear, in my opinion. Yeah, that's about it for today. As of right now, these podcasts are available on Google Play, Stitcher, and iTunes, or Apple Podcasts. And I've had a couple of requests for a couple other platforms, and I'll try to get those out there soon. And I'll announce that when available. Thanks for tuning in. Have a nice day, everybody. I'm going to roll my window down and try to cool off a bit. Cheers.